Hey folks, thanks for being a member of the Cafe Insider community. In addition to the Cafe Insider podcast and my weekly note, you also get bonus material from my interviews on Stay Tuned with Preet. This is exclusively for you. Hope you enjoy it. So shifting gears a little bit, talking a little bit more about your oeuvre, all those books you've written.
Mm-hmm.
So one skill you have, and I don't mean to overflatter you, is you take complex things, often legal issues, and you make them easy for people to understand as a storyteller. Do you have a philosophy or do you have a way of thinking about how to take something that's complicated, whether it's impeachment or the Mueller investigation or some of the legal issues in the O.J. Simpson trial and how you explain them to the lay public? Do you have, for example, a particular person in your head that you write for, real or imagined, or is it something else?
Well, I actually sometimes think about a law student on the first day of class, like an intelligent person, college graduate, who just like has no legal training, but is interested enough to pick up something I write. That to me is sort of the ideal reader. You know, I write about things that, you know, are somewhat complicated. You have to like be interested enough to read it, but I don't feel like I'm writing for lawyers, but I'm writing about people who are curious about the legal world. In terms of how to tell a story, I always remember something that my friend Dannon, who was a writer for The New Yorker several years ago, I was saying to him about something I wanted to write about, and he dismissed it, and he said, "That's a subject, not a story." And I always try to tell a story. I had a wonderful editor for several of my books, Phyllis Grant, who always was talking about narrative. You know, like keep the story going, it's like that to me is the most important thing. Something I often think about is how do you end a chapter in a way that will make people want to pick up the next chapter? On a minor cliffhanger of some kind, that sort of thing. But the idea that story is the most important thing, narrative, is something I always try to keep in mind. And anytime, you know, I'm writing about a legal subject and I'm into like the third paragraph of just like, well, some agree and some differ, blah, 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 blah. Then I'm thinking like, nobody wants to read this crap. Like, let's move the story along.
Is that how you select your books to begin with, what you want to write about? Not by topic, but by the story? Or do you sometimes select a sort of subject matter area and then it requires some work to figure out if it's a, you know, dramatically interesting story or not?
No, I always start with the story.
Yeah.
It's got to, and you know, it's got to have characters and it's got to have, this is sort of a cliche, but a narrative arc, you know, it's like, you know, people are thinking one thing at the beginning and things are different at the end. It's more of a challenge. You know, in my New Yorker work, sometimes I'll do, you know, a story that is subject-like as opposed to story-like or as opposed to like a profile. Those are harder to make interesting. I always try to pick a story or a person. You can tell a story through a person, and you can deal with issues through a person better than just talking about the issue in the abstract.
Do you read your reviews?
Totally. Are you kidding?
All of them?
All of them, absolutely.
You don't have someone screen them first?
No, I don't. But if they're good, I sort of skim them. If they're bad, fortunately, they're not many, I study them more. Is it a good review? Yeah, that's good. I like that. But you
study them more.
Yeah.
A lot of people probably do the opposite.
I think that's probably true. But I mean, I don't dwell on them, God knows. I don't read them over and over again. But I'm particularly interested when people say I screwed up in some way.
You know, I'll never forget, you were very kind to me and offered me guidance and advice, but you did piss me off when you explained your writing approach and how diligent you are and how much you have a routine. I'm sure it's still the case, but if you remember this, we had lunch at Grand Central Terminal like 3 years ago. And I said, "What's your process?" And you said, "Well, I wake up and at a certain time, I get a cup of coffee, I put my phone aside, and I sit at my computer and I write a few hours until I have 5 pages. I always try to write 5 pages. Some days I'm less, sometimes I'm more, but I don't try to make up for it the next day. And in a few months, I have a book. I thought, wow, that's so easy.
But that's close, but not exactly right. I never do less than 5 pages a day. And it's 5 double-spaced pages, 1,250 words. And, you know, I've been doing this a long time. And I remember when my kids were little, you know, they were like, oh, how many pages, Daddy? I mean, they were like, that was the one thing they knew. And it's different when I'm writing a magazine article. I don't have the same kind of quota system, but I really refer to it as my quota because it's my belief that the single easiest thing to do on earth is not to write, is to say.
It's the most beautiful feeling on earth is not to write.
Exactly. It's fabulous. It's like, oh, today I'll just read, or today I'll just do reporting. Today I'll just do editing. That's so easy and so tempting that unless you have this, as I think of it, really idiotic quota system that's so dumb and obvious and insistent, that unless you have that kind of system, I will not write. So I force myself to do the 1,250 words. And sometimes it's hard, but I usually get it done.
So is it for you, is it write drunk, edit sober, or write sober, edit drunk?
You know, the other thing is I'm an evening drinker, fortunately, and I'm not an evening worker. The whole drinking stuff is all on, it's in the evening, especially during the quarantine. I don't know about you, pal, but wow, geez.
How about fiction? Are you thinking about fiction?
Are you
going to reveal something here?
I'll tell you a story. In 2003 or 2004, I decided I was going to write a novel. And I wrote 3 chapters. And my agent at the time, Esther Newberg, said, oh, you know, Phyllis Grant, famous editor, really likes your writing, thinks it's a great idea that you'll write a novel. Send her the chapters. So I sent Phyllis the 3 chapters, and Phyllis invited me to her home, gave me a Diet Coke, and said, Jeff, your novel is terrible. I think you should stop writing now because it's not going to be any good. And I said, Phyllis, you know, I'm getting all these mixed signals from you. I was shocked. But at the same meeting, she said, you know, there hasn't been a book about the Supreme Court, like a popular book about the Supreme Court, since Bob Woodward and Scott Armstrong's The Brethren in the 70s. You should write a book about the Supreme Court instead. And that became The Nine, which is still my most successful book ever. So
is that your most successful? Why yeah, do you
that
think that
and
is?
OJ? Well, because to be honest, because a lot of schools still use it. And it was also named one of the best books of the year by the New York Times. It was on the bestseller list for 4 months. I mean, it was the right time for that book. It was also a good book. I don't know.
How many times have you? It was a very good book. Did you have a model? Was
no,
the Brethren
I didn't.
In the back of your mind?
I didn't really. No. I mean, I was familiar with The Brethren, but that's a very different book. They had more access to the justices than I did, but they weren't as interested in the legal issues as I was. And the great thing about The Nine was Bush v. Gore was at the center of it, you know, so you had this incredible drama.
Thank you again for becoming a member of Cafe Insider. Listen to the Cafe Insider podcast every Tuesday with Ann Milgram and me, and stay tuned every Thursday.